ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवाहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः शंकरं शंकराचार्यं केशवं बालरायणं सुप्रभाष्यकृतौ वंदे भगवन्तौ पुनः पुनः ईश्वरो गुरुरात्मेति मूर्तिभेदविभागिने व्योमवद्व्याप्तदेहाय दक्षिणामूर्तये नमः ॐ पार्थाय प्रतिबोधितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन ग्रथितां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीं अम्बत्वा मनुसन्दधामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणीं यं ब्रह्मा वरुणेन्द्ररुद्रमरुतः दिव्यैस्तवैः वेदैः साङ्गपदक्रमोपनिषदैः गायन्ति यं सामगाः ध्यानावस्थितज्ञतेन मनसा पश्यन्ति यं योगिनः यस्यां तन्न विदुःसुरासुरगणाः देवाय तस्मै नमः
Let us read the verse from verse 18.
यदा विनियतं चित्तम् आत्मन्येवावतिष्ठते निःस्पृहः सर्वकामेभ्यः युक्त इत्युच्यते तदा यथा दीपो निवातस्थः नेङ्गते सोपमा स्मृता योगिनो यतचित्तस्य युञ्जतो योगमात्मनः
कदा युक्तो भवति when do you say that person is a yogi? That's what Lord Krishna explained in the 18th verse. यदा विनियतं चित्तं आत्मनेव अवतिष्ठते When विनियतं चित्तं the mind that is completely नियतं mind that is completely brought under control and how does the mind come under control? निःस्पृह सर्वकामेभ्यः When one is free from longing for any kind of an object. Sarvakamebhya nispruha. Free from spruha. Free from longing. Sarvakamebhya. When there is nothing in the world that creates in him a desire to enjoy them. That's called vairagya. So when thus one has acquired the highest vairagya. That is passion. The freedom from raga and dvesha, freedom from attachment and aversion. And how does it happen? Having discovered that satisfaction in oneself. As we have said a number of times, it is not possible simply to discover vairagya or dispassion for the objects of the world, unless we discover a corresponding sufficiency from within ourselves. Otherwise, intellectually, I know with reason that there is no happiness in the objects. However, my mind keeps on running towards objects because it always wants some gratification. So, as the mind keeps on discovering gratification from its own self, it discovers vairagya, or freedom from the need of gratification of the objects of the world outside. Nispraha sarvakamebhyah, when the mind is free from every desire, where desire means a desire for gratification. It is a desire which in fact pulls the mind away from myself. Whenever there is desire in the mind thinks of the object of desire. If the object of desire is something different from myself, therefore, while the mind is thinking of an object, it cannot be thinking of the self. So that is why so much emphasis on becoming free from desire. I mean, it's not an offense to have desire. In fact, we don't even have freedom not to have desire, because desire simply arises from a need. But then we have to become slowly free from the need. That's the whole idea. And that can be done two ways. First of all, by analysis, recognizing that the wholeness is the nature of the self. And secondly, by constantly focusing the mind upon the self so that it gets a taste of that wholeness. So we have to give our mind a taste of that happiness or wholeness which is ourselves. Only when it gets that taste, then it becomes free from the taste of the objects. As I said in the second chapter, Vishayaha Vinivartante Niraharasya Dehina Rasavarjan. That we can create a physical distance with the objects of enjoyment. However, rasa, or the fascination for the objects, continues to remain. Rasopyasya param drishtva nivartate. And that attraction for the objects also goes away. Param drishtva, as you see, the contentment within ourselves. So therefore understand, vairagya is not merely a disinterest in the objects of the world or achievements, but also must be accompanied by a tasting of one's own self. The mind always wants gratification. Therefore, to the extent that the mind discovers gratification from itself, to that extent, it automatically becomes free from running after the objects. And mind is a habitual faculty. Whether we want it or not, habitually, it will run towards the objects as long as it does not feel a sense of satisfaction. So, say, vinyatam chittam, when the mind is very well controlled or mastered, because the mind has discovered a satisfaction with its own self. How does it happen? Because of the purity of the mind. As the mind becomes sattvic, the mind becomes pure, then the manifestation of the happiness is automatic. So effort we have to make is to make our mind free from raga and impurities of likes and dislikes. So as the mind becomes free from these impurities, the mind becomes sattvic or pure, and the happiness automatically becomes manifest. It's not that we have to make any effort. We don't need to generate happiness from ourselves. Self is the nature of happiness. All we need to do is for it to become this evident. It is ragadvesha, rajastamas that are inhibiting the manifestation of the happiness. As inhibiting factors go, the happiness, which is my nature, just becomes evident. And then the mind, which always enjoys happiness naturally, automatically remains there. So when no effort is to be made in order to make my mind focused upon the self, then the mind by itself remains focused there. Yukta iti uchyate, then the person is said to be yogi. Yatha dipo nivatastha nengate sa upama smrita. And in this verse 19, Lord Krishna gives an upama, an illustration or a comparison. An illustration for understanding what is the nature of the mind of a yogi. It is like the unflickering flame of a lamp. And when is the flame of the lamp unflickering? When the lamp is in a windless place. because it's the current of wind that creates a flicker or disturbance in the flame. So when the lamp is placed in a windless place, then the flame of the lamp is unflickering, is steady. It is bright as well as steady. And so also the mind of the yogi is steady because there is no flicker. There is no wind of the desire. So when the mind is free from the wind of the likes and dislikes or the wind of desire, there is nothing to flicker that mind. And therefore the mind just remains steadily abiding in its own self. Mind having discovered in its own self, just remains steady, abiding in itself. This is called, so when the mind naturally or effortlessly abides in its own self, completely content in itself, free from the need to having to run away, that state is called yoga. It says that abiding is a state of mind abiding in itself. This is now, this yoga is in fact, now in next several verses, Lord Krishna explains in little greater detail the mind abiding in itself loses also a separate existence. The mind no more remains as a separate entity from the self, but then it also, because self of the consciousness is the very nature of the mind. Mind is nothing but a thought, is nothing but consciousness upon which a name and form is superimposed. So when the name and form is no reason to be there, then the mind also remains as consciousness, conscious of itself. So you can, this is a state of a yogi whose mind effortlessly abides in its own self, completely content with itself, and therefore free from any flicker. So this state of the yogi is being described in the next four verses. So let's look at the verse 20th.
Yatro paramate chittam niruddham yoga sevaya yatra chaivatmanatmanam pashyannatmani tushyate.
Yatra. Yatra is seventh case. At what time or in which state? Yasyam avasthayam. In which state? So thus they talk of this samadhi here of in the two stages. In the yoga shastra is called sampragnyada samadhi, asampragnyada samadhi, or savikalpa samadhi, nirvikalpa samadhi, where the mind abides in the self and still there is some kind of an awareness that I am aware of myself. So some kind of a very subtle awareness of the individuality is there. That's called savikalpa samadhi. And where that awareness also goes away, then that state is called the nirvikalpa samadhi. Meaning the mind effortlessly abiding in itself with no need to retain any kind of separation. So separation also arises only as long as I consider it necessary to retain my sense of individuality. But then, when there is no need to retain the sense of individuality, all that remains is nothing but the awareness of the consciousness that I am. Yatra. So in which, yasyam avasthayam, in which state? What is Shankara? Yatra means yasmin kale, at what time? Or either yasmin, at what time? Or yasyam avasthayam, in what state of mind? Yoga sevaya niruddham chittam uparamate. Yoga sevaya niruddham chittam. Chittam of the mind niruddham restrained. Yoga sevaya by the practice of yoga. Yoga anusthanena. So by the practice of yoga. What is the practice of yoga? The attempt to bring my mind back to the self. and making the mind abide in itself. So yoga sevaya, when this is done repeatedly and for a length of time, so then the mind then effortlessly just remains there. In the beginning I have to keep on bringing it to myself. But when it discovers, like even in japa also, as we are doing japa, so Om Namah Shivaya, anything like that, in the beginning when the mind does not experience any joy in repeating that name or mantra, so long the mind by its habit runs away. I bring it back. It runs away, I bring it back. As in course of time the mind starts enjoying repeating the mantra or the nama, then its tendency to run away also becomes that much less. This is called rasa, it's called the gratification. As it discovers more rasaswada or gratification, its need to run away also reduces. And then in itself it remains repeating that mantra or abiding in that mantra or abiding in that name. Similarly also, so that is called the abhyasa. As later on we'll be told, abhyasa in the kaunteya vairagya cha gruhyate, abhyasa and vairagya. Vairagya means the dispassion for the pleasures in the world. Abhyasa is bringing the mind back again and again for it to abide in itself, to discover its own wholeness or completeness. Mind ultimately, the true nature of mind also is the self. So mind is to discover that wholeness is my nature. That consciousness is my nature. As it discovers, and then yoga sevaya. So by this seva or the practice of yoga, as described in this chapter so far, that when the yogi or the aspirant all the time and constantly attempts to concentrate the mind in the self, as a result of which uparamate, it just abides in the self. So as a result of focusing the mind upon the self, a time comes then without the effort the mind remains abiding in uparamate. So this state is called yoga, the mind's abiding in the self, or effortless abiding the mind in the self, is called yoga by Lord Krishna. Understand that the mind loves to be with itself. The nature of the mind by itself is only silence. Like the pool of water is silent by itself. It's only when we throw pebbles that the water, that there are these little wavelets and water gets disturbed. And so also, as we keep on throwing pebbles of likes and dislikes in the mind, that the mind becomes disturbed. When this external disturbance is not there, as I said, that is why nispruha sarva kamebhya, when kama, desire or raga dvishas are not there, when they are completely resolved, there is nothing to disturb the pool of the mind, and therefore mind remains tranquil, which is its true nature. So tranquility is really the true nature of the mind. Being distracted or agitation is not the nature of mind. Agitation is because something is thrown in the pool of mind to agitate the mind. And that is called kama. Nispruha sarva kamebhya. Or you can call it ragadvesha. It's the same thing. So thus when this disturbing or distracting factor is no more there, then the mind remains tranquil, which is its own nature. So we do not allow our mind to remain tranquil. We keep on disturbing it. The ego keeps on disturbing the mind by some likes, dislikes, some fear, anxiety, jealousy, anger, something or the other. So by this kind of feelings, the mind, the pool of the mind is disturbed all the time. Therefore, when these distracting factors are not there, the mind, which is tranquility in nature, just remains tranquil, abiding in its own self. So is it merely yatra uparamate chittam niruddham yoga sevaya? Yoga sevaya, by the practice of yoga, by the practice of concentration, when the mind ultimately becomes abiding in the self. Is it all that is to be said? Says, no. Yatra chaiva atmana atmanam pashyan atmani tushyati. Yatra chaiva, and where again? Atmana atmanam pashyan atmani tushyati. seeing oneself by oneself, one gains tushyati, one gains a complete satisfaction or contentment in oneself. So thus, the state of mind of yogi is described. He, yogi, is jnani actually. Understand, this is, all of this has the backing of the teaching. We are not here talking about merely concentration of mind. As we discussed in the first class, we are talking about this teaching of Vedanta, which says that I am Brahman. That Brahma Satyam, Jagan Mithya, that the objects of the world actually make an appearance of happiness, etc., which is not there. That happiness is the true nature of myself. That I am happiness or limitless by nature. So this is known to me. It is this knowledge alone that is put into practice to remove the habitual error. The habitual error is to run away into the objects. The habitual error is to identify the body-mind complex. That habitual error being there, the practice becomes necessary. The practice of this knowledge becomes necessary in order to help the mind overcome the habitual error of assigning values to the objects or of identifying with my body. Therefore, the yoga is, as will be told later on, is nothing but the viyoga, or disengaging the mind, disassociating mind from the non-self. So thus, the habitual error, overcome the habitual error takes its own time. Therefore, yoga sevaya, by the yoga anusthanena, by the practice of the yoga, of disassociating the mind from the anatma, from the non-self, when it is made to abide in its own self, then atmana atmanam pasyan, seeing oneself by oneself, meaning that the seer and the seen are not different. That's the whole idea here. Atmana atmanam atmani pasyan tushyati, seeing oneself by oneself in oneself, meaning the where the seer seen duality also is not there, but the seeing is there. The seer does not remain, but seeing remains. As Brihadaranyaka Upanishad says, nahi drashtuhu drashtehe viparilopo vidyate avinashitvat. Because seer or the knower is a role that can drop, but the seeing of the name ever remains. Therefore, atmana atmanam pasyan atmanitushyati. One discovers a complete contentment with one's own self, seeing oneself by oneself. What is by oneself? So by the mind which is sattvic mind, mind which is free from all the desires or rajas and tamas, atmana, by that mind, atmanam pratyakshaitanyam, seeing oneself as consciousness, atmani pasyan, seeing oneself in oneself, tushyati, one completely gains contentment. So atmani tushyati, the yogi discovers a complete contentment in himself. Though dehendriya sanghate, the contentment does not come from the body-mind complex, the contentment does not come from the sense object, contentment comes atmani, purely from one's own self. What effort is you made? No effort. Atmana tushyati. By oneself, one discovers a total satisfaction in oneself. So, the mind is completely abiding in itself, has discovered a total contentment in itself, and therefore, the mind remains abiding. There is nothing to disturb the mind. Therefore, this state of abiding in one's own self is called yoga. That abiding comes when the mind is made free from anything that will disturb it, anything that will distract it. And those things are number ignorance, and secondly, the ragadveshas. So ignorance having gone by exposure to the teaching, ragadveshas are gone also by the teaching as well as by the practice of abiding the mind in the self, as a result of which, when the mind becomes free from every obstacle which may distract it, then it happily remains with its own self. Like the birds, they return to their own nest in the evening. In the morning, the birds leave the nest in search of food, having flown in all various directions. When the evening comes, they stretch their wings and then return to the nest to abide there, And so also the mind returns to itself and remains contented. Therefore, we should create an inner incentive for the mind to come back to itself. And thus, when the mind abides in itself, that state, that all senses are incomplete here. Yatra, yatra. So the force will be there. Tam vidyad, you know that to be the yoga. Know this state of abidance in oneself to be yoga. So different visheshanas or different characteristics of what Lord Krishna calls yoga or self-abidance are given. This verse says that the mind effortlessly abides in itself and discovers a complete contentment with itself. Then a further vivaranam, a further explanation or elaboration is made in the next verse, verse 21.
Sukhamatyantikam yattata buddhigrahyamatindriyam veti yatrana chaivayam sthitaschalati tattvatah.
Again, yatra atyantikam sukham veti. Where one veti, one sees, one knows atyantikam sukham, happiness which is free from any anta or limited limitation. That means where one sees the limitless happiness. So here the seeing, being, experiencing, all of these become one. Seeing here is being. And being is experience. So sometimes people use the word experience, which usually conveys a sense of duality, but then even that experiencer experience duality is not there. You can call this seeing, call this becoming, because that is what one has become. So this sukha, the yogi has become this of the nature of happiness. Atyantikam sukham. So this is the nature of Brahman, which is happiness, atyantikam, antam atityavartate, which is of the nature of freedom from all the limitation. So the limitless happiness. Atindriyam sukham. Also this happiness is not born as a result of experience of sense pleasures or sense objects. Then how does it come? It's a nature. It's the nature of the self. As I said, this limitless happiness or wholeness is my nature. Only because of inhibiting factors that I was not able to see myself as happy. When those inhibiting factors are gone, then you can say, I see myself as a happy person. I see otherwise myself as an unhappy person. Or now I'm unhappy. But when the inhibiting factors are gone, I effortlessly see myself as a whole and complete being, where there is no lack or there is no want. So freedom from all the lack, freedom from all the want, this is how Veti, the wise person, sees himself as happiness which is lacking nothing. Happiness which is not created as a result of experience of a sense object. Because happiness that is created as a result of experience will go away when that experience goes away. Whenever I gain happiness as a result of experiencing desirable or pleasurable sense object, that happiness will remain as long as the contact with the sense object remains. And of course, as long as also my liking for the object remains. When any one of these goes away, then that happiness, experience of happiness, comes to an end. But understand, this is uncreated happiness. What they call, so not naimittikam sukham. There is no nimitta, but nirnimittam. Without any nimitta, without any reason, the happiness which is one's own self, veti, this is what one sees. So he knows. Because buddhi grahyam, atindriyam, this happiness is not a result of the experience of sense objects. It is one's own self. At the same time, one is aware of that. even though the buddhi as a separate entity may not, is not there, still one is aware of this vetti, that I am this happiness, that I am limitless happiness. This is what one sees oneself to be. So vetti, that's where the comma should be, because vetti goes to the first line, you know, not to the second line. Atyantikam sukham buddhigrahyam. Atyantikam yad buddhigrahyam atindriyam sukham tat vetti. So that which is the sukha or the happiness, that is what he sees. So vetti knows, becomes, experiences, whatever you want to call it. So the word experience used only to show the intimacy of the knowledge, that's all. That there is no doubt about that. One sees oneself as this limitless happiness. Yatra sthitaha, abiding where? Tattvataha ayam yogi, tattvataha na chalati. Abiding where? This yogi does not get deviated or distracted from his own self. Because there is nothing to distract him. The next verse will actually explain that. What can distract me from myself? Because there are no distracting factors. Therefore, remaining here, abiding here, the yogi just abides without being distracted or disturbed or deviated from his own nature. So here Lord Krishna gave certain adjectives for this happiness. Atyandikam sukham, meaning that the sukha or happiness is limitless, meaning it is Brahman. Atindriyam sukham, that is not the happiness generated result of these sense pleasures, and so is uncreated nirnimitta happiness. Veti, that is aware, because someone may say that in a deep sleep state also this happiness is there, except that one is not aware. And here, one is aware. So that's a big difference, vetti. To distinguish it from the experience of deep sleep state. Atindriyam, to distinguish this from the experience of happiness that comes from the sense pleasures. Buddhigrahyam, where one actually knows this. So, one's buddhi, so by one's own mind, in fact, one is aware. It's an awareful experience. Yatra sthitaha, abiding in which one does not get deviated or distracted from one's own nature. So what do you mean by this? That he does not get distracted, because there are no factors that distract him, which is what he said in the next verse.
Yam labdhva cha param labham. Manyate nadhikam tatah. Yasmim stito na dukkhena. Gurunapi vichalyate.
Yam labdhva, attaining which, acquiring which, aparam adhikam labham na manyate. This yogi recognizes that there is nothing greater than this. So this also is there. Thus he recognizes that there is nothing greater, that this is limitless. That this is boundless happiness, that there is nothing greater than this. There is nothing greater than I. So I am the limitless or I am the boundless self. This is what the yogi sees. He sees himself as happiness, which is fullness and boundless. Therefore, there is nothing greater than this. I am the limitless, and therefore, in the second chapter was said, Apuryamanam Achala Pratishtam, just as the ocean abides in its own natural fullness, and so also yogi discovers that fullness to be his own nature, and therefore recognizes that there is nothing greater than this. The mind has to recognize, as long as the mind feels that there is something greater, so long the mind will have a tendency to run towards what it considers greater. The mind itself discovers that there is something greater, therefore its motivation to run away from this or get distracted is not there. So when Lord Krishna said that, yatra sthitaha, abiding in which, this yogi does not get distracted or deviated, because what can distract him is this apprehension of the part of the mind,
that there is something greater than this.
Let's go satishayam sukham, happiness that can be surpassed. This is called niratishayam or atindriyam or atyandikam. This is unsurpassable happiness. Thus, the yogi also recognizes that this happiness, unsurpassable, the limitless happiness, and therefore, that this is the greatest, there is nothing greater or bigger than this. There is no other achievement in life or no other experience that can surpass this. And that being the case, the mind has no need or incentive to get away from here. So either it is this apprehension on my part that there is something better than this, that is what makes the mind go. Or because the mind becomes distracted by some pain, that's another thing. So in the second line Lord Krishna says, yasmin sthitona dukkhena guruna api vichalyate. This guruna dukkhena. So here guruna is the adjective of dukkhena. Yasmin sthitaha, abiding where? Guruna api dukkhena na vichalyate. One is not distracted even by a great pain. Dukkha here is pain actually. Although translation is a sorrow, but he is not aware of any sorrowful event or anything. In fact, even if there is some, rest is when one is fast asleep. When you are not aware of this body, then whatever pain is there in the body does not affect me, you know. So there can be pain in the body, but when I am fast asleep, how that pain does not distract me. And so when the yogi completely abides in this happiness, then whatever be the condition of body, there may be pain, there may be heat, cold, that kind of experience, etc., but they do not distract him at all. That's the whole idea. The two distracting factors can be there. Either the mind thinks that there is something that surpasses this, therefore it may want to run after that, or because there is some pain in the body which disturbs him from that. And we know that we do get disturbed by the pain in the body. Even a mosquito also bites, we get disturbed. But that depends upon the degree of concentration that you have. Just in the deep sleep, the concentration is complete, or the unidentification of the body also is complete. And similarly also, when one is totally identified with the self, when identified with the body, then the condition of the body also does not distract him anymore. Therefore, Lord Krishna said, yasmin sthito, therefore, yatra chaivayam sthitaha chalati tattvataha, abiding in which state, he does not get distracted or deviated at all. In fact, here Shankaracharya says, shastra nipadadi lakshanena. That must be his experience, I guess, you know. But shastra nipadadi lakshanena dukkhena. Even when there is a pain where somebody in fact injures you, even then also you are not distracted. That also you do not know. It is that kind of an absorption that they are talking about. But in general we can say that there is nothing that disturbs me or distracts me. So these three verses thus describe a state of the yogi. This is a state also. Ultimately one gains such a facility. One gains such an awareness of oneself that this awareness does not go away even when one is functioning in the world. In the beginning, however, it becomes necessary to withdraw my mind from all its occupations so that there is a firmness of this knowledge. That's called nididhyasanam. So nididhyasanam is to overcome all the viparita bhavana habitual error. As a result of which, when there is abiding knowledge, and then when one has become Brahman, then there is no need that one has to withdraw the mind also. Which we'll describe later on, you know. So, one who sees the self everywhere, you know, and one who sees everything in the self, all of these verses will tell us, you know, that he does not have to now practice anymore. But practice of yoga, which is the main subject of this sixth chapter, is there to become free from all habitual error until we gain an abidance in the knowledge. having become Brahman, what is meant by having gained abidance in knowledge is having become Brahman, where there is nothing to distract me from my nature now. Therefore, gurunapi dukkhena. subsequently, as a jivan mukta, as a liberated person while living, even though he may confront some very painful experience or whatever, even that also the mithya, one's own wholeness or fullness is so determined, or is such an abiding experience that even that experience of pain or sorrow does not ever create any doubt, doesn't distract him from his awareness. He doesn't forget that he doesn't become a jiva or something like that. So thus, an abiding knowledge, this is what we call yoga. In that sentence, all these three verses are incomplete. And so the sentence is completed now in this verse 23. So it says here,
Tam vidya dukkha sanyoga viyogam yoga sanyutam. Sanischayena yoktavyaha. Yogo nirvinna chetasa.
Tam vidyat dukkha sanyoga vyogam. In these three verses, Lord Krishna described what is called dukkha sanyoga vyoga. So what is vyoga? Vyoga is severing, disassociating or severing. From what? Dukkha sanyoga. From sanyoga, the union or association with dukkha. So human life is generally characterized by sorrow. That is called the association or union with sorrow or union with unhappiness or union with pain. Here we do not so much mean the pain of the body as much as the emotional pain, which is what we call sorrow. So what dukkha here means sorrow. So usually human life is characterized by association or union with sorrow. There is always sorrow. Now in that is Bhujaswami, dukkham, 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 sukham, dukkham, dukkham, because usually there is nothing but a chain of sorrow. Now and then there is a little experience of happiness when the cloud of sorrow clears momentarily and we have a glimpse of our own true self. At that time, there is the experience of happiness. That's called sukham. Something happens out there which momentarily clears the cloud of the sorrow and we have a glimpse of ourselves. Unfortunately, the sorrow comes back and again that glimpse goes away. Again, mind becomes sorrowful. I mean, this is a description of reality. It's not to make, Swami, this description is very negative. Why do you say that? Why shouldn't you say life is happiness? It is happiness also. In fact, that is what we want. And how to make the life happiness only? A happy go-round, not a sorrow go-round. The sorrow is, of course, an unnatural state. It's only due to some reason. Happiness has no reason to be there. Sorrow has a reason to be there. So why are you happy? No reason. Right now there is, it looks like there is a reason for happiness and no reason for sorrow. Right? Looks like that. Right now looks like happiness comes now and then and therefore there is reason for happiness. Otherwise there is sorrow. But in reality, there is no reason for happiness to be there. There is always reason for sorrow. Dukkha sanyoga. Because there is sanyoga or association or contact or union with dukkha. So Lord Krishna gives here a very interesting definition of yoga. In fact, through a negative definition, Lord Krishna says that what is called yoga is in fact vyoga. Because the word yoga always implies, or yoga suggests or means, some kind of a joining, some kind of a sambandha, some kind of association, some kind of a joining, because yuj is in the sense of yoke, or to join or unite. Therefore, the word yoga, always people understand that yoga means uniting atma with paramatma, something like that. Some union takes place. The Lord Krishna clarifies that in what is called yoga, there is no union. On the other hand, union already is. That means that we are born yogis. And we have to become vyogis, really. We are born yogis, meaning that we are already united with sorrow. Where does the sorrow come from? As we said this morning, sorrow comes from a sense of limitation about oneself. A sense of being inadequate. A sense of being insignificant. A sense of being excluded. Thus, from a sense of inadequacy, incompleteness about the self, comes the sorrow. As you said a number of times, I feel sorrowful at the moment I become aware of my inadequacy. For that, something has to happen out there. Somebody has to push a button to make me, as you said in the morning, I'm trying to avoid this inadequacy in myself. Somehow close my eyes to them and keep myself engaged in something so that I do not have to confront that. But sometimes I am made to confront. People make sure that I confront my inadequacy, you know. Sometimes they don't let me go. They keep on pressing, you know, pushing and pressing until I have to admit. But then what? Then what did you do, Swami? Then this is what I did, this is what happened to me, this is what I am. So when they celebrate this birthday, you know, what a wonderful thing, cutting cake and how old are you? What a question to ask her at that time. All that joy of celebrating the birthday and the cake and everything goes away right away. Because they make sure that I'm reminded of my age. That is a sorrow. Because of union with this body. This body has to age. And the time passes. The celebration of birthday is to somehow avoid thinking that 1 year has gone away from my life. I mean, of course there is always reason to celebrate the birth because being born as a human being is a great privilege and most certainly. But that's all we can celebrate, not from birth to now, there is nothing much to celebrate when I think of that life. When I recognize that a lot of time has been wasted, squandered away, what have I done? But if I think like that, I'll become very sad. Therefore, to avoid thinking in that manner, we have cakes and we have all kinds of things, you know, scandals, and so we keep ourselves busy in celebration. Then somebody says, how old are you, son? And all that celebration goes. A button has been pushed. A sensitive chord has been touched. Reminding me that, Swamiji, remember that 1 more year is gone. You realize that. Maybe this is to be asked of a child, I guess. How old are you? You know? This kind of happy birthday, etc. is all meant for children, I think. And how old are you also? Because child feels proud. I'm 6, you know? I'm 7. I don't feel proud that I'm 60 or something like that. You know? I guess to make somebody feel proud, this is asked, how old are you? But they continue that question for everybody, you know. But anyway, as I said, the sorrow is simply waiting. It's just waiting for any kind of reason. That's a constant undercurrent. And what is it that is due to? That is due to the sense of inadequacy about myself. At a moment when I become aware of my sense of inadequacy, I just become sad. Because I have an expectation of myself that I must be adequate, I must be limitless, I must be perfect. That is my expectation of myself. A very demanding person, all the time demanding of myself that I must be perfect. I may demand upon my son also that he must be perfect. But from there also ultimately, because somehow my son reflects me, therefore his perfection is interpreted by me as my perfection. And that's why I demand that. From my house I demand, from everywhere I demand, that painting color must be like this, and the furniture, all of that is why? Because somehow I feel that orderliness in the house, or the beauty of the house, somehow reflects my beauty. Somehow I take some credit for that. I feel that, okay, I'm all right. Therefore, all my attempts ultimately are to feel that I'm all right. That's all. Nothing else counts to me. Other things become important in as much as they help me feel that I'm adequate. So my son can help me feel that, not neighbor's son. And so even if he gets medical school, nothing happens to me because I'm not connected. But when my son goes to medical school, I feel, because I have some contribution in some way. And never I have satisfaction that I am all right. Lord Krishna says, we are thus, everybody is born with this union with pain or sorrow on account of taking this body-mind complex to be the self, which is very small, which is insignificant, which is inadequate regardless of what we do with it, and therefore identification with this body-mind complex will never enable me to have a sense of adequacy. Therefore, that vyoga, that severance of the identification, what is meant by severance from association with the dukkha, is nothing but severance or severing the identification of the body-mind complex by recognizing that I am not this body or the mind, that I am the awareness that enlivens the body-mind complex, recognizing one's true identity. And for that alone, the whole practice of yoga has been told here, to recognize the true nature of myself and gain an abidance in myself. Of course, recognition comes as a result of teaching. Understand that for the teaching to work, when I am told that you are Brahman, when will it work? That I am Brahman, this statement will touch me when? When will it do its job? When my mind enjoys this kind of concentration. When my mind enjoys that purity. When my mind is together, it enjoys purity. It enjoys that concentration. When I am told that you are Brahman, it makes sense to me. So understand that even to gain the knowledge also, tushyate tvagriyabuddhya sukshmaya sukshmadarshibhi, we do require a mind which enjoys purity and enjoys that single-pointedness. That is when the teaching becomes effective. In fact, only when basically what is meant by purity of mind is when the mind is essentially free from identification. So when the mind has become free from identification, then when it is told that you are Brahman, that's exactly when it works. And therefore, this practice is necessary for us, as Lord Krishna says again, So understand that, Arjuna, what we call yoga is nothing but the disassociation or severance from the dukkha or the pain or sorrow which arises from ignorance, which arises from taking the body-mind complex as myself. And therefore, create that distance and see the true nature of yourself as nothing but the unsurpassable happiness. Gain an abidance in yourself, that is called yoga. I can't do that. It's very difficult. So Lord Krishna, sanischena yoktavya yoga anirvinna chetasa. And so, that is yoktavya, that is to be practiced. Meaning that we have to practice making our mind abide in ourselves. We have to practice this, making the mind see the nature of myself and abiding in nature of myself. We have to do that. Therefore, what we call practice of concentration is so that the mind becomes exposed to its true self. Make the mind see that, look, this is my nature. And gain an abundance, then yoktavya, this has to be done. It will not happen automatically if you have to make a deliberate effort. Certain things do not happen automatically, you have to make deliberate effort. To discover the inner purity or maturity, a deliberate effort is required. And so also the mind to become abiding, a deliberate effort is required. Sanischena yoktavyaha. This yoga of concentrating the mind in the one's self has to be practiced with determination. So nischayena yoktavyaha with nischaya, there must be a determination that it has to be done. Anirvinna chetasa, and Lord Krishna also knows that in spite of this practice also, there are many disappointments coming sometimes. Therefore, anirvinna chetasa. So with a mind which does not become disappointed, which does not become dejected, which does not become depressed, so by a mind that enjoys enthusiasm, as well as a mind that enjoys determination. So Lord Krishna says that in this practice of concentrating our mind upon the self, these two factors also become very important, determination as well as the freedom from disappointment or dejection. because mind can become disappointed. And to explain this, there is a story being told traditionally. Even Gaudiya Padacharya also has said in his Mandukya Karika, Utseka Udadheryata Ekagreneka Binduna Manaso Nigrahastadvat Bhaved Aparikhedata. Says there, Gaudiya Padacharya, Udade Utseka, just as ocean can be emptied, Ekagreneka Binduna, just by drop you can even empty the ocean. So also, manaso nigrahastadvat bhavet aparikhedatah. So also, we can make the mind also completely abide in the self. See, this is a reference to a story. You people may have heard this story earlier. Story of a little bird. What is that bird? That's a tittari bird. It's a, It's a small bird called tittari. This bird has a habit of laying its eggs on the seashore. So this bird laid its eggs. And somehow the ocean was little arrogant. And it got, therefore it swelled. And it swept away the eggs of this little bird. When the bird came back, found the eggs were not there, it got very upset. And then it was told that, look, you laid your eggs here, ocean has swept away the eggs, they're in the ocean, so I want them back. And therefore, look at the stupidity of this bird. This bird says that I will make whatever efforts necessary, but I empty this ocean and get my eggs back. And so what would the bird do? In its beak, it can take one drop of water and then empty it here. Take one drop of water, empty it here. One drop of water, empty it here. Other birds saw this, hey, you are stupid. You can never empty the ocean this way. Give up that effort. Bird says, no way. If not in this bird, next I'll continue my efforts. But I'll see that the ocean is emptied. Out of the pity towards this bird, other birds also joined. If all the birds who kept on coming, they also started taking a drop, trying to empty the ocean. How is it going to happen? Sage Narada happened to come about there and saw this. What is going on here? He learned the story that, hey, these birds are trying to empty the ocean to recover those eggs. So then Narada went to Garuda. Garuda is the eagle. He is the king of all the birds. And said, you know what's happening to your subjects? You know what ocean has done to your subjects? He sort of incited, Garuda. Says, your subjects, these birds are, being harassed by the ocean. He has taken away the eggs and see, they are all struggling. Go and help them. So Garuda comes and sees all his subjects, his birds, struggling to empty the ocean. Garuda got a little angry. And he stretched his wings and started fluttering the wings, and because of that, ocean started drying up. Then now ocean recognized that, oh, I'm against a force and which is insurmountable, it will dry me up. Then the ocean became humble. Says, please don't dry me up, I'll return the eggs. Ocean brought the eggs and returned that bird. This is a story. Such wonderful stories are there, So, referring to this story, says Gaudiya Padacharya, Utseka Udadehe Yadvat Kushagraneka Binduna. Just as even the ocean also can be emptied by just one drop after the other. Manasaha Nigrahas Tadvada Bhavet Aparikhedana. So also, if you do not get dejected, don't get dejected, don't get disappointed. It has to happen. I mean, after all, it is my nature. Happiness, I don't have to become that. It is my nature. And so it's not that even God is obliging me, it's my birthright. But here in the story, when we are told that Garuda, the king of birds, he came and rescued this bird, meaning that when the individual is making an effort, Ishvara also blesses him. And therefore, We are not alone in this effort, then Ishvara also is with us. Therefore, that help also comes. Therefore, says, do not feel disappointed. And make a nischayana with firm determination that I'm going to do it. Anirvinna chetasa, with an undepressed heart, or heart that doesn't become disappointed or dejected, with a heart of the mind that retains enthusiasm, keep on doing it, and doing it, and doing it. Because ultimately, that's what we are seeking in life. What are we doing? If you don't do this, what else will you do anyway? Okay, if you don't do this concentration of mind in the self, then we'll do some activity anyway. But what is that activity for? Ultimately, any activity is meant for becoming free from sorrow, is it not so? Unfortunately, whenever I am trying to become free from sorrow through an activity, through some acquisition, through becoming something, I am only perpetuating the sorrow because I am perpetuating the identification. So inasmuch as human being is constantly struggling and striving to become free from sorrow anyway, and inasmuch as this is the only way of becoming free from sorrow, there is no other way because freedom from sorrow is your nature. So own up your nature. Right now I am disowning myself. Having assumed that I am inadequate, therefore I am disowning myself. And therefore, unless the tenth man disowns himself, he cannot be searching for the tenth man. The very search for tenth man is the denial of the tenth man, and so also, my very search for happiness somewhere is the denial of myself. So this yoga is nothing but really owning up myself, respecting myself, discovering comfort in myself. And so, this should be in fact very easy. That is very difficult, but then this should be easy. And therefore understand that you can do this. And this, even if you cannot do, what will you do? There is no other solution. This is the only thing to do. That's the only solution to the problem of sorrow. For other problems, other solutions are there. But as far as problem of sorrow is concerned, this is only a solution. So nischaya, and therefore, with nischaya determination, one must practice the yoga. And even if the success does not come, but Swami, I am practicing for so long, it doesn't come, I don't think this works. No, it has to come. It has to work. Because this is the only thing that can work in life, nothing else will work. Therefore, without being dejected, disappointed or depressed, and with determination, Lord Krishna says that this yoga of becoming disassociated with sorrow must be practiced. So again Lord Krishna will tell us how to practice it, that we'll see in the next class.
Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Shankaram Shankaracharyam Keshavam Badarayanam Sutra Bhashya Krutau Vande Bhagavantau Punah Punah. Ishvaro Guru Atmedi Murti Bheda Vibhagine Vyoma Vadvyapta Dehaya Dakshinamurtaye Namaha. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om.